Even though we are trying to stick to an exactly one malacha a week schedule, just over Shabbos is discussing the legacy a little bit of Rav Avadya Yosef, the Chatzadik Livracha, and saw that he has a tshuva about one of the points we mentioned last week, so I just thought I would mention that. It's actually kind of a segue between Zriya and Charisha. So we spoke last week about the shaila of opening the blinds in front of a plant that you have in the house and how that may be a violation of Zriya, although it could be a little bit of a segue because it's really somewhat similar to watering plants, and watering plants is actually a machlokas, in the Gemara at the beginning of Moed Katan. It's definitely a problem. The question is it a told of Zriya or a told of Charisha? So just revisiting that issue for a minute is a little bit of a good segue between the two. But we discussed that shaila about whether or not you can open the blinds on Shabbos when you have plants there. And we mentioned that there are three shitas that exist in the Rishonim related to a different shaila, related to the shaila of Tzad. That if you have a deer that wanders into your house and you happen to be leaving your house to go to shul, and you want to lock your house so that you'll protect your belongings from burglars, and then you realize, hey, a deer has wandered into my house, so free deer if I lock the door, that's a pretty good deal. So the problem is that would be a malacha of tzad, theoretically trapping a deer. So are you allowed to lock the door when you'll also have the impact of trapping the deer? And there basically are three shitas in the Rishonim about this point. I don't remember if we spelled out this specific comparison, if we just mentioned the bottom line last week. But the basic issue is that you have the Rashba, who was Makel on one extreme. The Rashba says that even if your intent is both to protect your belongings from burglars and to trap the deer, you're still allowed to do it, that the double intent makes it okay. And Achronim have definitely a number of theories to explain it a little bit further, but apparently that's okay according to the Rashba. And then you have the Ran at the other extreme. The Ran said that even if you have no intent to trap the deer and your only intent is to keep your belongings safe from burglars, it's still usur because of the psik ratio that you are trapping the deer, so it doesn't matter that that's not what you're trying to do. And in between is the view of the Shulta Gibarim, that if your intent is to protect your belongings, the fact that you're also protecting, you're also trapping the deer, is not going to make the action awesome. So kind of three views. Again, the Rashba's Makel, even if you intend to do both actions. The Ran is Machmir, even if you have no intent at all to protect the deer, to save the deer, trap the deer rather. And the middle view, which many Poskim like, is the Shulta Gibarim, that if your intent is only for the Mutter action, then it's permissible, even though it will also involve the Asr action. So there were many poskim who felt that you could basically take that machlokus and apply it here, and that it's the same kind of position, that the Rashba would be makel, even if you intend to do both, to make your plants grow and to have light in the room, and the Ran would be machmir, even if you have no intent to make the plants grow, and the popular view of the Shulta Gibarim would allow it if you're only intending for light in the room, even if it also has the impact on the plants. So Bavadja has a tshuva about this, in Yechavadas, it's in Chelek Hei, where he mentions that he thinks there are additional svaros lahakel in this case. That first of all, he thinks one difference lakula between this case and the case of the deer, where he thinks maybe even the Ran would be makel, is that opening the window, opening the blinds, is basically a hasara samonea, that the light and the air is there already. You're not creating it. It's just blocked by the window or the window shade. So it's not comparable to, let's say, watering plants, where you are introducing water to the plants that's not there otherwise, and it's not necessarily comparable to trapping the deer, where you are doing something to trap the deer who would otherwise go free. So he assumes that that's a significant difference, and that maybe even the Ran would acknowledge that difference. And then he also makes note of another factor, which we kind of alluded to last week, but he connects it to a different point that we mentioned, that we discussed the fact that it's considered to be only an issa d'rabbanan to shift a plant from the ground, say if it's an otzitz nakuv, if you have a plant that's in a pot with holes in it, So to shift it from being in the, literally on the ground to pegs above the ground or vice versa. So the Gemara says that that's an issue of, if you pick it up, it's an issue of Tolesh. If you put it down, it's an issue of Zareya. But the Rishonim, except for the Rambam, the Rishonim mostly say that it's only a Sidrabanan. And the Eglei Tal, if you recall, has to explain why is it only us and the Rabbanan. It sounds like this should be like watering the ground or doing something to make it grow better. And he suggested that it's only things that actually enhance the growth in a way that it wouldn't otherwise happen that is a chiyuv of Zareya, but something that just accelerates the process, which makes the same thing happen quicker, that's not necessarily an act of Zareya. So he thought also here, there already is air and light in the room. So if you open up the window, so you'll put more air and more light in the room, but you're not making anything fundamentally different that wouldn't be there already, which we mentioned a similar story that maybe the difference just isn't so significant. But in any event, he puts it together with this idea that you find by the Otzitz Naku, that whatever is being added is really not so significant, so at most it's an Issa Drabanan. And then he notes there is a view that maybe we'll discuss if we ever talk about Sigresha head on, that a number of Rishonim and Poskim held, even if this is a question if this is acceptable Maisa, but it's a Sniffle Hakel, that Sigresha by Drabanan is Mutter. So if the Yisr to begin with is Drabanan, and the Sigresha therefore is on Drabanan, so there's a view that that's Mutter, which again is questionable if that's true Allah halacha by itself, but as a sniff for the other things, he counted that in to be nagel. So it's just another factor to mention. And again, while we are completing the week of Shiva for Bavadra, it's worth mentioning that as kind of a bridge between these two topics. Okay, so now let's try to pick some key points in the time that we have to talk about the Charish, to decide what to focus on. So, Charisha, as we said, is either the second malacha or the first malacha, depending on how you count. We're talking about it second, but strictly speaking, it should be first, because, and the Gemara raises this question, because it seems like chronologically it would come first, that if you're going to plant, so you have to plow the ground first in order to plant. And the assumption is that there's clearly a relationship between the two, and we'll talk about that relationship. The Gemara and Kuf Gimel and Shabbos says that the shear for Charisha is a kol shehu. It seems to be anything. And the way it's explained, and that way it comes out from the Mishnah, and the way it's explained elsewhere, is that if since even a little bit of Charisha can lead to a big plant, so if we're looking for significance, so therefore it doesn't matter that it's very small at this stage, it's going to result in a big growth potentially. So again, there is this connection between Zriya and Charisha, and we assume that it seems to be all one process. Rav Osner has a tshuva where he notes that if we assume that Kol Shehu is the shear for Charisha, so we really have to be careful with kids who are playing outside in the dirt. We have to make sure they're aware that if they're going to dig around in the dirt even a little bit, so then the smallest amount is already a shear Charisha. So they have to be aware that there's a serious potential of malacha. Kids who are Gia L'chinuch should be aware that there is a potential real malacha on a level of the Raisan that could potentially be violated. There's also a whole discussion of the shear really kol shehu, and Yerushalmi it sounds like there is some smaller shear. So kol shehu sounds like it means there's no shear. It means like anything is already the malacha. So some of the later Sfarim explain that kol shehu doesn't mean nothing, it means something, it just means something that's too small to talk about exactly what it is. So it's a technical debate to say there's no shear or there's a very small shear. But again, for practical purpose, doesn't really make much of a difference that anything that you could take note of would potentially be an Isser of Charisha. And that seems to be a factor of its relationship to Zriya. So that relationship to Zriya probably expresses itself in a few other points. There is, in terms of the definitional question as to what Charisha is, there seems to be a machlokas, two phrases that sound very similar and that each one has support from various Gemaras, but they might mean different things. That Rashi, in the beginning of Masechet Moed Katan, and the Gemara really, the beginning of Moed Katan, and Rashi over here, if you have it in front of you, Rashi and Ayin Gimel, seems to understand, Rashi has the phrase a couple times over here, that the issue of Charisha is that which comes for the purpose of Rifui Ara. I just give one example, a couple of Rashis like this, but just the Rashis that I'm opening up, I see two at once. So when I give them the base, you see Malach Acha saying, Kul Rifuye Ara Avida, Rashi Mishum Choresh, the Marafe Ara. Next Rashi also uses the Rashis all over have the word Ripui by the definition of Harisha, that Harisha is an act to weaken the land. That make the land softer, you know, weaken in a positive sense, to make it softer so that it's more workable. While the Rambam has a different language, the Rambam also has Shas to base on elsewhere, on Daf Kuf Gimel, but the Rambam's language is, he's talking, in the context, he's talking about some of the derivative actions, some of the toldos of Choresh, but he uses a phrase there, Kol Shehu Yafos Esakarka, whichever is to improve the karka. So there are those who posit that the machlokas here is whether you hold that the purpose of Zriya is as a hachana the purpose of Harisha is a hachana for Zriya, that's the whole reason it exists. So therefore Rashi's reading of softening the ground is understandable so that you can plant in it. While maybe the Rambam sees it as something kind of separate from that, that anything that improves the ground for whatever purpose is included in Harisha. So that's how some understand that it's all a question of the connection to the Malacha of Zareya. The problem is it's not so clear that's really the issue in the Rambam. As it's noted that just the phrase Yipui Ara or Liapos Sakarka doesn't necessarily mean not for the purposes of Zriya, because you find the Yerushalmi has a similar language. The Yerushalmi says, Kol Shehu Lahanoyas HaKarka, everything that's there for the benefit of the Karka. And there the Yerushalmi seems to be lists a whole list of actions like taking rocks away and fertilizing the ground and all of that, that seems to be addressing actions which are for the purpose of Zriya, just in a broader sense. So it's not necessarily clear that the Rambam, by focusing on language like that, necessarily means to exclude the possibility that it's there for Zriya. You find other Rishonim also, Rabbi Hananel quotes a pasuk in Yeshaya, talks about evening out the karka, but the Arzarua quotes that language also in the context of preparing for Zriya. So if there is a machlokes as to what the definition of Harisha is, it's not so clear what side the Rambam is on. It's not so clear necessarily that Ripuyara and Yipuyara, the very similar sounding words, that they're necessarily arguing about that point. However, the Shita Laharan, he does say explicitly that there is work that one does on his land, even separate from any consideration of Zriya. So he is explicitly taking a side in this issue. It is clear that you do seem to have some Rishonim who focus on Zriya preparation, and some of Rishonim who say Beferish is not about Zriya preparation, but it's not clear that it really revolves around this issue that some have pointed to about the language of Ripui Ara versus Yipui Ara. In fact, it could be suggested maybe the Rambam really is in Rashi's camp in general, that it's really about preparation for the planting. It's just that maybe the Rambam sees it more broadly, like Yerushalmi, that anything that has any role in preparing for planting is going to be considered Harisha, while Rashi sees it specifically as something that softens the land. And that could perhaps address a question that Degley Tal wrote. Degley Tal asked that we know that one of the aspects, one of the components of Harisha is what's called the no-till givshusha. So let's say you have a little bit of a pile of dirt, a small little mountain on the ground, and you take away that mountain, you'll scoop it up, so then that's a derivative, at least, of Choresh. So Egle Tal said it's a little bit difficult, because if Rashi says that it's all about softening the ground, so here, the ground that you're working with is not the ground you're going to be planting in, because you're going to take this and you're going to throw it away. So it's a little bit doifik, he thought. He says, maybe you could say that by doing this, it ends up weakening, softening the ground that's under it, but that's a little bit doifik. He's not 100% sure how to address that. So maybe you could say that Rashi, you just have a tzura and a purpose, and you need to have them both. That for Rashi, the malacha is the tzura of softening ground, and the purpose is to prepare land for Zriah. So if you have them both, you have the malacha. And it happens to be, in the case of Notol Givshushis, that the land that you're softening is not the land that you're planting in, but maybe it doesn't matter because you have at least both components, that you are doing a pu'ula of softening land, and you're going to have the purpose of preparing it for Zriah. So maybe Rashi is focused on that particular tzura. And the Rambam, and we've seen this distinction in other malachas in general, that the Rambam seems to see an av malacha as really anything that shares the general purpose. And Rashi seems to have a definition in general where he's focused more on specific formats together with a purpose. So maybe that's the issue here between the two of them, that they're really both about preparing for Zriah, but Rashi needs it to be more of a specific Ula together with that, and the Rambam is more open like the Yerushalmi, and the Shita L'Haran and others might say it's not about that at all. It's not about preparation for Zriah. It's essentially anything that improves your field is going to be an act of Harisha. So this is also an important conceptual question, because the Gemara discusses together, here and I in Gimel and Beis, and the Gemara draws many parallels between the Malacha of Harisha and the Malacha of Bonet. So very often the Gemara will mention something, if you learn Sukkis here and I in Gimel and Beis, the Gemara will mention something and say that the same action, if you do it in a field, it's called Harisha, and if you do it in a house, it's called Bonet. So if you understand that the nature of a malacha is avoda sakarka, so then you can see how they're really very strongly conceptually linked. That anything that you do in the field to improve a field is considered to be harisha, and anything you do to improve a residence is called bona, but they're basically the same type of idea in different contexts. If the notion is that it's there, harisha is there to prepare for planting, so then really there's a big difference between harisha and bona. Bona doesn't really have anything to do with that. And the only similarity is kind of more incidental, that there are pu'ulas that have the same impact, and therefore they have to be considered together. So it's a question which may have some impact, this comparison that's constantly drawn in the Gemara between Bona and Harisha. Is it a real strong conceptual link, or is it just an incidental link, which could have some nafkaminas? For example, you have to consider the question of what exactly is the definition of a Soda and a Bias, and is there no man's land? So the Gletal, for example, suggests that anything that's meant for Harisha is considered to be a Soda, and anything that's meant for Dira or for Hiluch is considered to be a Bias. Maybe there's no man's land if you have an area that's neither residential nor made for Harisha and Zriah, maybe for Zriah, so maybe it's nothing. There's a discussion about graves, which are presumably meant for neither. So that's an important issue, because sometimes there are actions that somebody might want to do on a grave that might border on Harisha, to figure out if that's an Issa d'Oraisa or an Issa d'Rabbanan. It's also a discussion, what if you have something that's not technically mechubel l'karka, like let's say there is a zeva, let's say there's animal droppings on the ground, and you scoop that up. So the Magen Avraham sounds like that's an act of Harisha. So it's a question, well, what is the Harisha for the purposes of planting, or is it improving the land? And it presumably also ties into this question. It's also relevant to the question the Svarim talk about whether there is a chiyah for what's called a Harisha Shnia. Let's say somebody plows in order to plant, and then once he's planting, so then he shuffles up the ground again. So that helps the planting, but that's after the fact of the planting. So is that a chiyuv or not? So it sounds like from our Gemara that that's actually the definition of Choresh in the Mishnah, because our Gemara asks, why is it that Zareya is mentioned first? Because Harisha should have come first chronologically. So the Gemara says, well, sometimes the way they did it was that first they had to break up the land in order to make it plantable, then they had to plant, and then they had to do it a little bit more. So it sounds like from our Gemara that there is a chiyuv for a Harisha that takes place after Zriah, but if you have a different gersa in the whole story, like the Rambam does, you don't necessarily have to sign on to that whole thing. And it could be that it's only a Charisha that's beforehand that is going to be Chayev al Charisha, and afterwards maybe it would be something else, or possibly Derbanan, depending on the circumstances. It's also interesting if you want to focus on the relationship between Zriya and Charisha. So we discussed last week also, we mentioned a little bit a few minutes ago, that there is a shayla if you have an otzitz she'eino nakuv, if you have a pot, let's say, which holds plants, but it has no holes in the pot, so it doesn't connect to ground, it's self-contained. So we saw that it was a machlokus whether or not there's an iser daraisa of zriya in that context, and that there were those who felt that it was shelo kederech zriya to plant in a pot. So a pot that doesn't have holes in it. So some assume that therefore, if that's the case, if it's only an Issa Drabanan to be involved in Zriya in that case, therefore it's only an Issa Drabanan to be involved in Charisha in that case. I thought that was an interesting assumption, because it's one thing to say that Charisha is defined by being an act that's prepared for Zriya, but it's a bigger Chiddush, I think, to say that it's connected to Chiyuv for Zriya. That one would think that if you're plowing for a biological act of planting, the fact that it's shelo kederech and you're not chayev for it, maybe that shouldn't matter. The harisha is still the same, unless you want to say that harisha in a pot is also shelo kederech, and that's how they're connected to the two. But it just seems that there's a connection being drawn here, not to say that conceptually harisha means preparation for planting, but that the malacha of harisha with a chiyuv is connected to the malacha of Zriya, which is interesting because it's a linkage between two malachas that you don't often find with the malachas that they're connected in such a way. So I thought maybe there were two ways to explain why you might have such a linkage. One is that, first of all, it's Sidur of the past, so we do find that there is a certain process where these first 11 malachas are considered to all be one continuum, so maybe that's why there's a greater relationship from one malacha to the other. But also, maybe Charisha, like we see with some of the other malachas, that maybe Charisha should have been viewed as Mekalkil. Maybe you're breaking up land, maybe it should have been viewed as something which is essentially destructive in nature, and therefore wouldn't necessarily have had a chiyuv to it. So the whole chiyuv of Charisha comes because of its relationship to Zriya, that because it prepares for Zriya, that's what makes it a constructive act, and therefore there is a stronger connection between those two malachas than you would otherwise find. Perhaps. Just a suggestion. It's also interesting, it's relevant to a lot of malachas. We alluded to this last week, and we said that we would fill this in a little bit this week, that it emerges from the Gemara and Pesachim and from other sources, that whether or not you say that it's connected to the malach of Zriya specifically, but we certainly do find that the malach of Charisha only applies to land that is Roy Lizriya. So therefore, for example, the Gemara Pesachim, if you saw, seems to say that if you have rocky land where you can't plant, so they're not going to have a malach of Zriya. It's also a discussion in the other direction. What if you have very soft soil, it's not going to last. Let's say if you make a hole in the soil, it's going to collapse right away. That's a machlokus in the Rishonim. But it does seem to be clear that if you have land that's not Roy Lizriya, so then there is no Isser Charisha. So this touches upon a global question. So if we learn the malachas from the Mishkan took place in the desert. So in the desert, if one were to be Charish in the desert today, presumably one would be Potter. That would not be considered to be an act of Charisha to be Chayef. So how can we derive our malachas from the Mishkan when in the context in which the Mishkan existed, there would not have been a Chiyuv Charisha? So there's a few approaches just to mention too, and again, this is relevant to a lot of malachas and relevant kind of in a global sense. So Tosfos and Chumen suggests that there were miracles happening then. Everyone has to agree that there were miracles happening then. The only question is just how they played out, how they, you know, this is kind of consistent with our Hanukkah theme, that the miracles and how the miracles happened are relevant. But some suggest that the desert bloomed at that time. You know, they were able to make the desert bloom, so therefore their desert was Roy Lizriya, even though our contemporary deserts are not Roy Lizriya, and that's a part of the miracle. Yorachaim and Chumash comments that the Be'er Shel Miriam was able to make the desert into arable land, part of its whole miraculous nature. And others suggest that deriving things from the Mishkan does not necessarily mean deriving from what actually happened in the Mishkan. That it means that we look to what would have been necessary, that the Mishkan had a lot of things that happened miraculously, so that's not necessarily relevant to us. But when we ponder the nature of learning a malacha from the Mishkan, it means that we look, theoretically, what would we need in order to make a Mishkan today? What kind of malachas would we have to do? And those malachos are going to be considered to be malachas, even if they didn't actually have to do them at that time. Hi.
This idea that we're saying that for Harish to be Harish Sest and Makom, or you would have Roy Lizria, so isn't that tough to say? The whole premise of our mission is that it wasn't Roy Lizria, so now we're doing a Harisha so that Eretz will be softer so we can do Lizria. So that original Harisha is still a Harisha because you're making it into a land that's useful.
Right, but sometimes even a Harisha won't do that. So if the Harisha is not going to have the effect because the land doesn't have the potential to grow anything, so then a Harisha is meaningless. But a Harisha, which is a step, which is actually a good segue into the next issue, because it seems to be there is a Machlokas HaRishonim, which would be very relevant, that let's assume again that Harisha is the preparation of Zriya. It sounds like from Rashi that it has to be the last step, that you just soften the land, now you can plant, that's the Malacha of Harisha. While the Rambam, again, kind of consistent with the Yerushalmi, the Rambam seems to have a broader definition, that anything that will ultimately yield the land that will be ready to be planting, that's going to be considered Harisha, even if there's a couple of stages still to go between this and Harisha and the Zriya. But the point is, again, though, that if you could work all day, you're never going to be able to grow anything out of this land, so then that's not going to be considered an act of Harisha. There's a couple of other important points. I'm just trying to do some triage here, trying to decide what's important to talk about. It's also interesting to note there's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. They both agree that if one does Harisha, how could you do Harisha? You could do Harisha a couple different ways, right? You could do Harisha by taking a plow and plowing the land yourself. But let's say you use an animal to plow. Let's say you use an ox to plow. So the Rambam and the Ramban both agree that that's also midaraisa, but there is a difference. The Rambam understands it as a reflection of the fact that the pasuk says, "Laman yanuach," that you should be at rest, not just you, but also your whole household and also your behemos. So the Rambam says it's a lav that doesn't have an onesh to it, and then he discusses not necessarily the exact same thing as machamer. We can talk about what machamer is. But the Ramban says, no, you're chayiv deraisa. This is no different. He says, both in his Asagis and the Ramban, also his Kiddushim. Towards the end of Shabbos, the Ramban says that is what Harisha is. That Harisha, the derech of Harisha, is often to use certain tools, including animals. So, yes, there's a chiddush in general that having your animals do halacha is also a problem. But if you're using a cow or an ox to plow, that's kederach of how people plow, and therefore that's just a full malacha. There's no difference between that and anything else. So that machlokas is also evoked in modern context in terms of machines. If you use a machine to plow, so is that considered to be indirect plowing, or is that considered to be direct plowing? The Chazon Ish thought that was full malacha of Harisha, because that's the way people plow in contemporary times, so therefore that's normal plowing. Just like using a behemoth, Ritzi Pesach Frank thought it was a step removed. Maybe we'll have an opportunity to discuss again if we could talk about general Shabbos topics. So one of there are a couple of issues, a couple of sheer titles which could mean opposite things. So for example, if you want to talk about electricity on Shabbos, it could mean two completely different topics. It could mean that you want to talk about whether actions that are otherwise mutter, like let's say opening a door, should they become usur on Shabbos because if there's electricity introduced into the process, does the involvement of electricity make a permissible act prohibited? But at the same time, you could also give a shiur of equal length about the opposite topic, that sometimes using an electric device might make a prohibited act more mutter, because maybe it means that you're doing a malacha indirectly or shalom kedarach, and therefore it takes a usur act and makes a mutter. So two opposite topics. If I gave a shiur with the title Electricity on Shabbos, I might be referring to two opposite issues. making permissible actions usur and making prohibited actions mutter, or at least less prohibited. So this is a machlokus in general, which draws a little bit on this literature by Harisha, that how should you view the introduction of an electric tool into the story? Is that simply the way people plow, so it's no different than plowing any other way, or does that make it somewhat less of a direct malacha, the issues of electricity aside, or whatever malacha might be involved in using electricity aside? So that's an important issue. So just we only have a few minutes left. There's more to talk about, but I want to also discuss some of the halacha l'maisa concepts that come up in this malacha. So first of all, we're talking about in a royal lizria. So it's generally assumed that to let, we said at the beginning, that letting children play in the dirt could be very dangerous if they do any kind of digging at all, because that'll probably be a full-blown malacha of harisha. Maybe in the form of chofer. By the way, chofer is digging, so it's machlokus whether that is a whether that's a tolda or a av. But either way, it's nesed deraisa. Just parenthetical, actually, before we mention this, to mention one other point. It's also a very big klalistic Shabbos issue. So the Gemara also says that if somebody digs a hole, let's say in his house, so that should be normally an act of bona, an act of Choresh in the field, an active bona in the house. But if he's only interested in the dirt, he has a dirt floor and he wants the dirt in order to use the dirt for something else, so that sounds like a malacha shenetzricha legufa, the way we define it, that he's doing the act of harisha slash bona, but he's not doing it for his normal purpose, he's doing it in order to take the dirt. So that should be a malacha shenetzricha legufa that is Pater. And the Gemara says that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who maintains that Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa is Chayiv, even he would pater this because it's Makalka. You're going to mess up your house by doing that, by digging these holes in your house. So therefore, even he would agree that you are Pater in that case. And it's a Shaila, what happens if it happens in the field? In the field, where it's less of a concern of Makalkels, but it does seem to be Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa, so that's a little bit more of a machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda would not necessarily agree with that, but in the house he would agree. So there's an interesting Trumas Hadeshin, it's a little bit counterintuitive. The Trumas Hadeshin says, talking about the field, that if you don't want either the hole or the dirt, so then you're chayiv again. Right? It's a little bit counterintuitive. If you want the hole, that's a full-blown malacha. If you don't want the hole, but you want the dirt, so then maybe that's a malacha shenetzricha legufa. But if you don't want the hole or the dirt, then it comes back to being chayiv. So why should that be? Right? That if it was not wanting the hole that saved you from being chayiv in the first place, so why are you in more trouble because you don't want the dirt? So there's a couple of ways to approach that. You could say that it's really the presence of a different purpose that's what negates the malacha, and not having any different purpose is going to be a problem. Rav Osner has a tshuva about this, where he says that ma'aseh the tzuras hamalacha is that you're weakening the land and making it more plantable. So if you're going to take away the land that you're weakening, okay, so then maybe that will negate the malacha. But if you're not interested in the land, so you weren't focused on the whole, but you were not taking away the land either, so then you are still left perhaps with at least some level of chiyuv, and maybe that's why it's worse than somebody who wants the land. But in any case, that's also, again, global issues from Choresh. That's one of the major passages in terms of malacha shenetzricha legufa and makalkel, etc., and the definition of those terms. So again, to go back for a second, so to some of the practical issues. So in terms of land that's not roi lizria, so it's a problem for kids to play in the dirt with shovels and the like, but to play in a sandbox seems to be mutter, because sand, let's assume that it's fine, dry sand, that's not going to involve malachas of choresh or other malachas if it's dry and wouldn't necessarily involve lush or anything else. So theoretically, that should be okay. I wouldn't necessarily have a reason to stop a child from playing in a sandbox, assuming that a sandbox is made for that purpose, so it's not muktzah. If you have sand that was not set aside for that purpose, then the sand may be muktzah, that would be a problem. But you have a sandbox where it's all fine-grained sand that can't be planted in, and that doesn't have any other components that are going to create any malachas, and that's set aside for that purpose. So it doesn't seem to be that there's any reason to stop children from playing, and that doesn't seem to be there's any real malacha or gezeira involved. In general, there is a concern that the Gemara has in a number of places in the context of Choresh, called Ashviye Gumos, that there is a concern that certain activities with karka will come to flatten out the karka. And that's one of the things the Gemara over here raises as a form of choresh, that a person who's evening out the ground, taking away the bumps, making the positive contributions, negative contributions, filling in the gaps, evening out the bumps, whatever it is, that's going to be an aspect of choresh. So when the Gemara raises the concern of Ashviye Gumos all over the place, and there are many drabanans, it seems to be drabanans that are a function of this, I'm not 100% sure how to interpret it. I think there's a little bit of space to question what exactly the nature of that concern is when the Gemara mentions Ashviye Gumos in repeated context. I'm not sure if it's telling us that there's an Issur Drabanan because we're afraid doing certain things will lead to an act of choresh, or is it even a little bit more than that? Is it kind of a psikresha consideration that basically it's saying that this is choresh? If you do these acts, it's so inevitable that it's going to lead to a smoothing out of the ground that basically is a choresh consideration. I think there's some room to be mistopic about that, about whether the different halachos that come up in the Gemara in this context are drabanans or daraisas. But in any event, we do have such considerations. So included in these considerations are if you're going to sweep the ground, or if you're going to put oil on the ground, or rinse the ground, or do other things that are working on the ground in your house. So these seem to be all prohibited because of the concern of Ashviye Gumos. So it's a shaila in terms of sweeping the ground. So nowadays we do tend to sweep the ground, because it says in the Shulchan Aruch that if you have ground that is carpeted or that has wood on it, that has an actual floor, if it's covered, so then you could be mako. And it happens to be that the Ramah says we shouldn't be mako. The Ramah says that we should worry that even if the ground you happen to be on actually is covered, has a floor, whatever it has, still we have to worry that maybe you'll come to do this on uncovered land. So that certainly would be a gezeira, that certainly if the land itself is covered, he's worried about uncovered land, so that certainly would be at most a drabanan. So despite the fact that it sounds like, okay, then we have to be machmir, so we who follow the Ramah, except that Taz and others write that even the Ramah was only talking about a situation where most of the floors were uncovered, were unpaved, so you had dirt all over the place, which was true up until relatively recently, 100 years ago in Europe, the floors were exposed. So it wasn't so common that you have ground in the house that's covered. So maybe the Ramah is saying that in that circumstance, then you have to worry that you're gonna come to do these same activities on land that is uncovered, that's exposed. But nowadays, where we live in settings where really everything we're dealing with is paved, is covered, is got a floor on it, so then they think that even the Ramah is makel with this, so therefore it could be makel when it comes to sweeping. But we're not makel in terms of oil and other things like that, so the Mishnah Berurah writes that he thinks that there's a bigger tzorach for sweeping, that you want to sweep l'kavod Shabbos, if the house doesn't look nice for Shabbos, so it's more necessary to do some basic kind of sweeping. So we're makel on that based on the assumption that in our houses nowadays we don't have an Ashviye Gumos concern, but we don't necessarily allow all of the gzeiros. But the basic act of sweeping, that we are makel on. Hi.
Could we quickly mention women in high-heeled shoes?
Yes, so let's try to get that in a second also. So that's one of the things we'll talk about in a second. So there is a big discussion, what about shoveling snow? How does that play in? So there are those who are very machmir about this. There are those who thought that shoveling snow involves an Issur Daraisa of Ashviye Gumos, or leading to Ashviye Gumos, and that therefore you can't even do it Al Yidei Akum. I think if I remember correctly, Rabbi Ribiat says in his Sefer, that if you have a standing agreement with a non-Jewish service, that if it snows, they show up. If they show up, you have to send them home. But there are others who are much more makel on this, especially if it involves a sakana, and don't necessarily feel it to be Ashviye Gumos, considering the fact that the snow on our walkways, the land on paved ground, And so therefore, Rabbi Shlomo Warman, Zechus Tzadik Livracha, has an essay about this and a sefer Arusa Shabbos, and I think Rabbi Willig basically feels along the same way, that they don't feel that there's a Yisur Daraisa involved in Shavuot. No, it's certainly not Shabbostic, it's certainly got Tircha issues and Shabbaton issues, it's certainly not something that we would recommend doing for fun, but normally the reason somebody would feel motivated to do this on Shabbos is because either it's a sakana or there's some major tzarech that can't get to shul, so there's a tzarech mitzvah or a tzarech sakana to do it, so under those circumstances, I don't know how much we'd focus on the tzarech issues, so there's definitely yesh mi'al ma'lismoch in this area, even though there were those who were much more machmir, and I think Rabbi Simon told me Rabadi thought it was Shvuyi Gumo, so there are those who are machmir on this, and there are those who felt that there's a significant room l'hakel, again, especially taking into consideration the fact that there may be sarkana or other significant impediments to human safety involved. So in general, just what Jonathan was raising, I'll try to quickly mention. So on the one hand, let's talk, as you say, bicycles, and you have strollers. So both of those would seem to plow into the ground to some degree. But we have different attitudes towards the two. That when it comes to bicycles, so the poskim are not so excited as you can imagine. Rav Harfenis has a tshuva where he has, I think, six reasons why he thinks bicycles are asur on Shabbos. Among them, it's choresh considerations. Among them, the uvda d'chol considerations. Prompts an interesting discussion. What exactly is the definition of uvda d'chol? It's a little bit of a mysterious term, the idea of a weekday thing. So some in the Kalkelos HaShabbos, the author of the Tiferes Yisrael, he quotes from the Rambam that the concept of uvda d'chol means you have something which looks a lot like a malacha and has a good chance of leading to a malacha, which presumably have to say not strong enough a possibility for it to be a gezeirah, but it's the kind of activity that is too dangerously close to malacha without Chazal having specifically answered it. And also, if there's tircha involved, that's also thrown into the definition of uvda d'chol. It's not a settled topic what exactly is uvda d'chol. There is a significant literature about it, so just to make reference to that. But when it comes to the baby strollers, so there's less of an uvda d'chol type of consideration. So the assumption basically is that the, among other heterim, that as much as you are poking something into the ground, from a refui ara consideration, you're actually doing the opposite. And the Gemara talks about this. Gemara talks about this in a slightly different but connected context, that the heavy stroller will push into the ground in a way that it will compact it. So it's not going to do anything, you're not doing anything useful for planting, you're not doing it for the purposes of planting, it's happening as a kind of a psikresha, and what's happening is not actually refui ara, it's the opposite, it's compacting the land. So with all those svaras together, there are those who are mako, and then they extend those svaras also to walking sticks and to high-heeled shoes as well. One could argue that high-heeled shoes have less of a tzorech than the walking stick and the stroller, so that's a fair point, but in general, we tend not to interfere because the basic svara that applies to these other activities seem to apply as well. And it's also going to be relevant if you're walking in the dirt, so you don't necessarily have to walk in the dirt, but yeah, if one wants to be machmir, no reason not to be machmir on that if you want to, but we don't tend to tell people they have to be because, strictly speaking, it shares a basic logic of the baby carriages and the walking sticks, although those tend to be a little bit more necessary for usage on Shabbos. Okay, so there's a lot more to say about the Harisha, but again, we're trying to stick to a one malacha week format, so I think we'll call it there, and Be'ez Hashem, next week we'll try to move on to Kotzer. I think everyone should have...